You're listening to the Study Clicks podcast, your number one source for junior psycho and leaving cert tips. We make exams easier. Hello everyone and welcome back to another episode of the Study Clicks podcast. On today's episode, we're joined by Dr. Richard Hogan, who is a family psychotherapist as well as Study Clicks' parent and student advisor. You're very welcome to the podcast, Richard.
Good to be on, guys. Thanks for having me.
So tell us a little bit about yourself and what your work is like. You're Study Clicks' parent and student advisor. So tell us a bit about how you work with secondary school students in your job.
Yeah, thanks, Erin. I've been working in schools for over 25 years, you know, as a teacher, principal, all the rest of it. But then for a substantial number of years, I've been talking in schools, trying to give students good mental health, good thinking, good approach to their study, kind of getting through self-limiting beliefs, getting out of their own way so that they can really believe in themselves and have the courage to go after what they want to do. And I don't use the word courage lightly because it takes a bit of courage to go after what you want. And it takes a bit of courage to kind of understand that, you know, you don't always get what you want. And the CEO is a tricky old thing. And you've got human people correcting the thing. And sometimes there's errors in there, but you have to have the strength of character to go after it and to really bring into life what you want. Because, Erin, there's nothing more rewarding in all my experience. There's nothing more rewarding than actually putting a good process in place, working towards a goal that you want to bring into your life and a kind of a self that you want to actualize and making that happen. And when that happens, that feeling is incredible. The brain is primed. You know, that's what it's designed for, to reward you for doing something positive for yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So for a lot of students, we'll have just finished first semester, basically, of sixth year. A lot of sixth year students and a lot of fifth year students will just done Christmas exams. But if a student, let's say, is felt they haven't done as much study as they would have liked, or they haven't feel like they've developed any good habits yet, what is kind of the advice that you give to students in that sort of scenario? Yeah. Sort of coming back after Christmas, what sort of things can you put in place, or where can you start if you're looking for somewhere
absolutely
to start?
Absolutely, Andy. It's all about getting some, what the Japanese would call ikigai, which is like flow. It's all about getting some sort of just, you know, not massively. There's plenty of time to pull this thing around, you know. There's loads of time here to get yourself into where you want to get into and to get good, to be in good shape before the Leaving Cert happens. And so what I would be trying to do is just, you know, particularly over Christmas, I'd be trying to think, how will I go about my little bit of study here? And I think there's probably 7 study sessions there for me. If I look at it, I could take 3 days off over the weekend, 3 days off over Christmas, 2 days with them New Year's Eve. And then the rest of the days I do a bit of study, and I might do 5 or 6 hours there and have enough study sessions that I can do 7 of those study sessions there over Christmas. I just try to build my habits, you know. I don't know, and I've never met anybody, and I've been in university for 14 years doing an undergrad, HDiv, master's, science medicine master's, and a PhD. And so, did I enjoy those moments of studying and all the rest of it? Not really. Did I enjoy school? Particularly not. But I enjoyed the outcomes. Right. And so I was able to kind of think about the outcome that I wanted rather than the actual thing. Do I enjoy this? I don't think many of us do enjoy that. And to really make an outcome to come to life, I was always aware, Andy, that you had to delay immediate gratification in the moment. And what I'm always trying to say to students is that, like, you know, your happiness, you can make yourself happy, because I'm here today as at one point yesterday, a future self. And if I did bad things yesterday, my preparation or my, you know, for a week, if I didn't do anything positive for myself, I wouldn't feel good today. And so if I do something positive over the course of the week, I can actually make my future self, which isn't too far away, feel good. Now, June can feel like, you know, really far away. And August the 20-something can feel like miles away. And, you know, starting college can feel like a really far away. But it's not that far away, but it's far away to be able to turn things around. And what I'd always say to people is, like, get the process in place, first of all. Build habit. Habit is just, you know, it's just the chains of doing something repeatedly, not excessively, just repeatedly. And you can still have a life. You can still have a weekend. You can still meet your friends. And you can still go out and do your sports and all the rest of it. But just building a few things that are more positive into your, you know, your preparation, it will impact on your mental health. And all of a sudden, you'll be a little bit more buzzed about doing your work because, you know, you've got a bit of momentum behind you, a bit of flow behind you, a bit of habit behind you. And it's like, just start. That's the main thing. Just start. And know you'll have bad days where you don't study. It's like going to the gym, you know, you'll have days you don't. You'll have days you'll have a Burton McDonald's going home, you know, and all the rest of it. It's like, expect those days not to go so well. But the real key to success here is that you just get back into it and you don't wallow in it, and you don't go, oh, what's the point? I didn't do yesterday. You know, all that kind of stuff. And the real bad thinking that you get into there is, what's the point in this? You know, what's the point in studying? Or another one that I see an awful lot of is that when I don't do well, this is when someone has a negative belief. When I don't do well, if I don't study, and then when I don't do well, at least I can say I didn't study. I have an excuse to get out of it. And I'm like, and they're like, and I'd say to them, is that a get out of jail card for not doing well? And they're like, yeah. And I'm like, that's a prisoner. That's a prison key there. That's an ensuring prison for yourself there. You know, that's a get into jail card. And so what you have to do is really think about your thinking and then just put some habits in place. And I'd always say to myself, you know, how do I feel after I do a bit of work for myself? Worse or better? I know it's going to be better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think it's so important to really drive that point home, that like, it's not too late to start. It's not too late to try around at any point.
Loads of times, Erin. Loads of times. I mean, from January to June the 6th, whenever it is, loads of time to turn the whole course around. You could nearly do the whole thing in that particular period of time. You know, you could do it if you were serious about it, and you wouldn't have to do it excessively. You just have to break the course down. And what I'd always say to students, this is where they fall down, particularly boys. They won't have an outcome goal when they go to study. They'll just think like, you know, I'll do a bit of English. But they're not saying, you know, at the end of the session, I'll know Macbeth and I'll know these quotes in Macbeth and blah, 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 and I'll know about kingship. They don't have that precision. They're not precise. They're just kind of going, what'll I do now? A bit of poetry? And, you know, and they're not being precise about their study, and they're not utilizing their time properly. And so it's about just getting a bit more precise about what you're trying to get out of it and understanding the mocks won't be perfect. The mocks are designed there to show you. Like, you know, you're freshly out of it. You know, did your mocks go brilliantly?
Yeah. No.
All right. I guess what you got. What, Erin?
Not anything special.
Not as good as the real thing.
Yeah. And did you jump up from that to the Leaving Cert?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know what I mean? And Erin, if you did it last year, that was one of the hardest Leaving Certs going. And Andy, you did it what year? 2022?
Yeah.
Yeah, nice one. So you know, that's, you know, you've got really good knowledge of it because you've just recently done it. And it's about, like, you know, what helped you guys to kind of get to where you want to get to?
I used a lot of, as you said, because I was thinking of outcomes and stuff. I remember I used study apps a lot that would record how much time, or I would put how much study I'd done in each subject. So then after a few months, I could look back and go, actually, over 3 months, I've almost done like 60 hours or something on maths. Yeah. So that made me it gave me a reassurance that I've actually spent that much time on it instead of doing all these time and almost thinking about all the stuff I haven't done and forgetting all that I had already gone over. So that was a big thing for me, is apps. Yeah.
Sure. Like, yeah. And that's the modern age for me when I was studying, you know, cause like, what motivated me to do so well in my Leaving Cert and go into college and all the rest of it and get scholarships and do all that stuff was my junior cert was so bad. You know, I did a horrendous junior cert. I was up in my bed. I didn't know how to study. I was listening to Bob Dylan, and Bob Dylan didn't come up in my history paper, and he didn't come up in the French paper, and he didn't come up in the science. And I was like, what the hell? Where's Bob Dylan in all of this? You know, and where's John Lennon in all of this mess? And I did an atrocious junior cert, but I was like, Christ, I don't want to repeat that again. So it was motivation to kind of like, and so my Leaving Cert was good. And then college was very good. And so there wasn't a jump in IQ. There was a jump in understanding what the Leaving Cert required. There was a jump in understanding what, you know, studying actually is and how to get the most out of it and do, you know, the least, you know, and all that. And so, yeah, again, there's a really important part about being exam savvy and knowing what's required of you and having those outcome goals.
Yeah, there's so much to say for understanding the exam itself and where best to dedicate your time. And I think it's so important to like manage that uncertainty. But aside from uncertainty in relation to exam content itself, a lot of students might tend to feel, especially if you're in sixth year or coming up to exams, might tend to feel particularly anxious in school or leading up to exams. How do you treat people who are dealing with anxiety in your job or coping with stress, and what kind of strategies would you put in place?
Exactly. Well, see, there's exam stress and exam anxiety is absolutely normal, Erin. You're designed to feel that, you know what I mean? When you've got an interview, when you're going for a job, you know, the Leaving Cert is a particular one because, you know, you're doing probably 7, maybe 8 subjects, and maybe 3 or 4 of those aren't anything that you're interested in. Like for me, maths and Irish were things that particularly I found, you know, unpleasant. I had a very negative relationship with them, and they had a very negative relationship with me. But you still had to do them to get through. And so, you know, there'll be anxiety about doing papers that you don't really like. And then, like, English and history and French and all the ones that I loved, they were quite easy for me and all that. So again, if I'm anxious about something, first of all, what I'd say to people always is that's normal. exam anxiety is normal. Now, if it's getting in the way of you actually studying, you got to figure out, well, what is the particular anxiety that you have? The greatest antidote to exam anxiety is feeling prepared. Now, there's five big personality traits, and one of those is conscientiousness. And if you have the higher levels of conscientiousness, it can be a bit perfectionism, and you can be stressed about the idea of the exam not going absolutely perfectly. And I have never, in all my experience, have an exam that's gone absolutely perfectly. And it's about managing, you know, a bit of doing really well in the exam is about managing it, you know, and utilizing it, you know, what questions suit you better and all the rest of it, and not getting caught there. And so the first thing I would say to people is, like, you know, think about your process, and have you put enough effort into this to feel that you could get something good out of it, right? And if the answer is yes, right, then you know you're going well here, you're well prepared. And what can happen here in an exam, there's a whole neuroscience behind it, you know, and I won't bore you too much with it, but, you know, when you get stressed, cortisol gets released, and norepinephrine, which focuses you down in, like, you know, what is stressing you. And so all of a sudden, a bit of memory can get misplaced. When cortisol gets released, it takes away chunk memory. So you could look at your exam paper and go, fucking hell, I'm gone blank, right? And what I'd say to you in that scenario, if that happens, that's just stress. That's just stress. That is a quick shot of a hormone there that won't last too long. Now, it will last longer. If you're sitting there going, come on, Jesus Christ, I'm stressed, I would always get up. If I had that experience, I'd get up and go to the toilet and take three deep breaths. Breathing is really important for, like, stress. Now, this is if I'm in the exam and I'm stressed. I'd go to the toilet, take three huge breaths. Now you're saying, I'm under time constraints and all that. And I'd say, well, I'd rather do that than sit there stressed out of my head. Get up and go, because cortisol, that stuff will calm down. Norepinephrine, that will fade, right? And your memory will come back. Your memory gets a bit distorted by cortisol. So sit back down again and just look at the questions that you can answer and just start off like that. Have a little process of, like, managing the paper. What question you're going to go to first? You know, if I'm doing paper one, say English, I'll do my comprehension first, because that will calm me down. You know, it's an easier assessment. The first question is quite easy. What do you think of Erin from this extract? You know, the second question. And so you'll get into it and you'll be calmer. And then you're going into the bigger questions. And I do the same with history. I do the same with biology. I pick the section that I'm particularly strong on, and I'd go for that first to calm me down. And so I'd have a whole strategy about managing the paper. But again, just go back. Let's say if you get really anxious beforehand, right? I had a student there recently. Two years ago now, she's in third year medicine. She's in second year medicine this year. And I met her before the mocks, and she looked exhausted, right? And she's a brilliant student. And I said to her, I'd call her Sarah. I said, Sarah, what's going on? You look very tired there. And she said, yeah, I didn't sleep at all last night. And I said, okay, why? And she said, because we've got the mocks tomorrow, you know, and I need to be rested. And I said, oh, I know that mind. Don't we all know that mind?
Yeah.
You know, the mind that says, I need 8 hours. Have you ever slept well when you say to yourself, I need to get 8 hours tonight? Has anyone ever had a great sleep after that?
No.
When I say that to myself, I go, oh, shite. Tonight's going to take a bit of work here to get myself out of this thinking, right? And so, and then you're going, I say this to her, does this sound familiar, Sarah? If I get 8 hours now, I'd be grand. 7 hours, like, oh my God, I'm only going to get 6 hours. Oh, Jesus Christ, it's only 5 hours. And I have to wake up 4 hours, 3 hours. She was like, that's pretty much what happened to me last night. And I said, how many hours did you get? And she said, none. And I said, okay. I said, tell me about the junior cert. And she said, disaster. I had insomnia for the whole thing. And I was like, okay. And how did you get on? She said, I did a really good junior cert. And I said, okay, that's interesting. So would it be that you don't actually need that much sleep? And would it be actually, it seems like you're a high performer without sleep. And so maybe you shouldn't be sleeping that well before exams, right? And I could see her looking at me going, what the hell is he prescribing here? You know, what's he saying to me? And I said to her, you know, did you ever watch Usain Bolt running? And she said, yeah, I have. Yeah, I've watched Usain Bolt. And I said, I would think, I don't know about you, Andy and Aaron, but I would think training your whole life for 9 seconds, the night before that 9 seconds would be hard enough to go to sleep, particularly when you need incredible amounts of rest for your body to produce oxygen and to, you know, for your twitch fibers and all that, for your body to be rested. And so I said, that's where, you ever see him running before? He's like this, he's doing all this messing, you know? And I said, there's a guy who's relaxed. And she says, yeah, yeah. And I said, well, I've studied Usain Bolt, and I look at him and I kind of understand him. In his first major race, he was so anxious, he put the shoes on the wrong feet, and he still won the race. And ever since then, he has never had a bad sleep before a race. And I said to her, why do you think that is? And she said, because he knows he can win on his worst day. And I said, absolutely. And you know, on your worst day in your junior cert, you did a fantastic junior cert. And she was like, oh, Christ, yeah. And I said, so in future, when that thought creeps into your head about sleep, just say to yourself, I use an expletive there. I said, you know, F sleep. You know what I mean? You don't need that much of it anyway. And she was like, Christ almighty. Is that true? And I said, yeah. And the next day I saw her, no, true story. The next day I saw her in school and I said to her, well, Sarah, how are things going? She said, the best night's sleep of my life. So I was just about to get into the 8 hours, 7 hours. She said, I heard your Cork accent saying to me, sure, you don't need sleep anyway. And the next minute I woke up, right? And so students get themselves into this position, Aaron, you know, really wound up. I have to this, and I have to that, and I have to. Mm-hmm. And then TikTok is talking to them and telling them how much sleep they need and all the rest of it. And all I'm saying is just relax about that whole thing. You can perform at a very high level without sleep. You know, and so it's just like relaxing about that and having better approaches to your like anxiety, like maybe going for a walk in the evening, listening to a podcast, you know, just getting out in nature, going for a swim. For me, sea swimming and going for a run is very important to keep all of that stuff nicely controlled and regulated.
Mm. Yeah.
I feel like one more thing I'd say to you on that. Students often think I need to be worried because if I'm not worried, I won't do well. They see it as a kind of armor. And what I'm saying to them is like, I get it. I get all that. But look, that worry hasn't done anything for anyone ever. It just ruins the present.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Definitely. No, I feel like it's so easy for students to fixate about what they're not doing or what they should be doing more of and just kind of focus on that side of it as opposed to what they are already doing. And that can produce a lot of guilt. How would you recommend combating study guilt? Feeling guilty from, I don't know, spending time hanging out with friends or doing things away from study that maybe are taken away from time that they could be spending in the books.
Yeah, no, it's a good question, Aaron. You have to have time away from study. You can't study all the time, and nor should you. The best students I've ever worked with, I mean, students who got really, really high points and students who really achieved their potential, they're the best students. I always think I don't equate it to high points necessarily, but students who really reached their potential are students who worked well and had extracurriculars and had their friends and had, you know, social stuff and did all of those things. They're really important. You know, they were playing in bands, they're playing camogie, they're playing football, they're playing hurling, they were doing their sports, you know what I mean? And they were doing the leaving cert at the same time. You don't want it to be all leaving cert, because I had a student last year like that who came to me a bit too late. He burnt himself out. And he came to me like the week before the leaving cert saying, I think I've burnt myself out. And I was like, tell me all about it. And he was just walking around saying 625 to himself all the time for like 2 years. And he was studying nonstop. And by April, he was just done. His brain was toast from the whole thing. And I was like, that's not good for you. You are a teenager. You should be meeting your friends. You know, it's really important that you get away and forget about the leaving cert. Because, like, you know, gray matter and all the stuff that allows you to put stuff into coded memory, which is really important for your leaving cert, that grows when you're relaxed. And when you're chronically stressed, let's say, about the leaving cert, dopamine doesn't fire. And so then you're kind of almost hitting like a flat, detached line of kind of existence. And that's not good for like studying. Studying, you need to be kind of relaxed and you need to be in good form and you need to be, you know, positive about things that you're doing and making a list of what you're getting done and how you're moving and what you're trying to get to. All of that stuff has been positive, because the leaving cert shouldn't be a terrifying Everest. It should be kind of exciting to kind of see, can I reach my potential here? I know I have something I haven't seen in myself yet. That's the way I felt. I know there's something here that I haven't really reached yet. Let's see if I go after it, will it come to life?
I find it's really interesting when you talk about burnout there. I mean, how do you kind of avoid that? As you say, I keep the motivation going without almost being too motivated in a way.
Yeah, you can be, Andy. You can be too motivated. You can be too wound up about this whole thing, and you will get burnt out because the brain only has certain capacity to take this stuff in. And then all of a sudden you won't be sleeping, and then you'll be agitated and you'll be narky. And you'll be really difficult to be around and you won't be comfortable in yourself. And it's like, you know, you become cynical and you become restless and irritable. No, that's not a position where you want to be. So burnout is a very real thing. Mm-hmm. And when you touch off it, you know, it's a very real thing, you know, and you're overwhelmed. It's like trying to put water into a cup. The cup is full. You can't put any more information in there. It's just spilling out. And I would say, yeah, you have to understand yourself better at this age. You know, you're an adult now. And it's like figuring your mental health out. What do I like? What helps me to regulate myself? And I'd figure out what that is. The phone is something you'd have to really think about your relationship with, because the phone doesn't actually allow your mental health. You know, when you go on your phone, you scroll and you kind of feel like you're doing nothing. And it's like a way to unwind. That's not unwinding you. That's actually getting you wound up. That's that, you know, when you're watching video next, 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 that's keeping your brain in flux. That's like shooting an amphetamine into your body and thinking, oh, I'll relax now. You know, it doesn't work like that. And so I'd try to get some time away from my phone. I'd try to do things that I like. You know, when I was doing my Leaving Cert, definitely going for a run. I loved running when I was a younger man. Sprinting and all that stuff down the GA pitch, I'd do all those things. That gets dopamine. That gets all these really nice neurotransmitters going. I'd be trying to do that so that I'm positive in my thinking, I'm positive in my feelings. Because when you come home from work or from school and you're knackered and you do nothing, you develop a really inert kind of lifestyle and you feel crap. The more you do, the better you feel.
Yeah. I think it's interesting what you were mentioning about, we were talking about study guilt and stuff. I think a big thing for me that I saw a lot of people in my year, and I felt it in the trap a little bit as well, is like comparison and comparing yourself to other students and like seeing how much people... how much some people are studying and thinking, I need to be doing the same. How do you kind of figure out, you know, that everybody works their own way and trust kind of that?
Students, you know, at this level can wreck your head. Like, you know what I mean? If you sit down, you listen to what they're doing and what they're not doing and who's doing this and who's that. What I'd always say is like, you know, that's noise. That's the noise of the Leaving Cert. And I would just try to keep focused on myself and what I'm trying to achieve, not what others are doing. Don't get distracted by other people's results, first of all, right? Because it's a long way from here to the Leaving Cert. Don't get distracted and don't get discouraged by other people's results. You see someone getting an H1 in maths and you get a H4 or 5. Don't get discouraged by that. I know what I'd rather do. Get a H5 in the mocks and get a H2 or 1 in the Leaving Cert. I know that for sure, right? And so don't get discouraged. Don't listen to it. Don't take it in. I mean, there's a whole psychology around doing well in the Leaving Cert, and it's about being consistent and about having positive mental kind of thinking here and affirmations and thinking about how this is why I always feel it, about it. How do I want to feel going into the exams? How do I want to feel going getting my results when I flick open my laptop on the 20th of August? How do I want to feel then? You know, how do I want to feel in September when I'm heading off to whatever college degree I'm going? How do I want to feel then? I have the capacity right now to bring that person's feelings into place. What I do now will ensure how I feel in the future will be positive. And if I get caught up in all the noise of other people and what they're doing, and that discourages me and makes me a bit disheartened, and I come to this conclusion, why am I bothering? I would say that's the thing that will get in the way. And I'd always, before I go to anything, and I'm trying to bring something into my life that's, say, a high-level thing, I'd say, what's going to get in my way here? Maybe my phone, maybe comparing myself, maybe my thinking, maybe the belief that I can't do this thing. Maybe if I go into a thinking, all of those things, that will get in the way of bringing this thing into life. And so I would go to my way to kind of avoid those traps.
Mm. Absolutely.
I think it's really interesting hearing you talking about how important it is to be goal oriented and to focus on the work you're doing now to get to a certain place that you want to be in the future. I know sometimes it can be really difficult to, you know, if you have a real belief in yourself that you want to get to somewhere, and if others around you also have high expectations of you, it can be hard not to feel kind of a lot of pressure in some scenarios. So how would you recommend kind of dealing with that pressure of expectation, both from outside sources, but also maybe within yourself to do well?
It's a really great question, Erin, because one of the things I often see, and I'd often call it like the kind of the tyranny of talent, is the way I always think about it. You know, when you showed great promise as a younger person in primary school or whatever it is, and all of a sudden you're called the talented one. And then let's say you're very good at English or you're very good at maths. And, you know, when you get a H2, the whole class goes, oh, he didn't get a H1. You know what I mean? The whole class kind of jokes about it, and because they perceive you to be like infallible in the subject and all of a sudden. That's incredible pressure. And all of a sudden, then the pressure of that, it can have massively adverse impact on how someone performs. They can almost subconsciously push against it, you know, to show that they're not doing well personally inside themselves. They can actually, you know, crowbar their process in that subject just to say, I need a bit of help over here. Or they might have a belief, I'm not as talented. I remember working with one guy many years ago, and I remember he had this belief, and he didn't know he had this belief, but that he wasn't as talented as his parents thought. And he had just stopped studying completely in the Leaving Cert. He'd done a brilliant Junior Cert and really performed. But the pressure of the Leaving Cert and what his parents had expected of him was absolutely crippling him. And I remember the moment where he kind of when he had that breakthrough and he said to himself, like, you know, maybe I'm trying to bring into life my worst fear about myself, that I'm not that talented. I'm not what they think I am. And maybe I'm trying to kind of show them that they've kind of like, you know, messed me up with all this expectation. What I'd say to anyone with that, like, you know, is, having expectation of yourself is a good thing, you know, being ambitious, That's a good thing. When it's excessive and it's getting in the way of you performing, and all of a sudden you feel like it's, you know, really kind of, you know, stopping your progress, I would sit down and think, why am I, you know, why, what is it I want to get here? Why do I want to achieve this? And if I don't achieve it, this is the most important part of it. If I don't achieve it, because none of us get everything we want, life doesn't move like this, Aaron. You know what I mean? It's not a straight line. It's what Carl Jung calls a circumambulation of the self. It's a oscillating circle. It goes up a bit, it goes down a bit. I went for scholarships, didn't get them. I went for scholarships, got them. You know, got this, got that, didn't get that promotion, did got that. And so there's like, you know, setbacks, and then there's moving. And so if I want to do something and I expect it to be perfect and to move in a line, it's probably going to kind of like straitjacket me. I have to understand that I won't always get everything that I go after, and that's okay. And maybe that kind of is character building and understanding that that's not a failure, that's learning. And so if I don't get, say, the CEO points that I want to get to medicine next year, not failure. You'll have to kind of like reroute what way you want to go to it. Maybe the HPAT let you down. You know, maybe you need to go abroad to do medicine. Maybe you need to repeat the HPAT. You know, I've worked with so many people who repeat the HPAT 2 or 3 times to get into medicine. And now they're flying in medicine, but it took them a moment to go back and do it. And they were like, you know, full of you know, talent going into it, but just didn't perform on the day. That happens to everybody. Everybody has a bad exam, you know, and everybody has a bad moment. Messi didn't get every penalty, you know, Ronaldo didn't get everything. He's at, I mean, everybody in any profession, Usain Bolt had a couple of false starts. Everybody in any profession has moments where they don't perform. It's just like, how do you react to that and your expectation of not performing? I think you have to be better that, you know, you will at times have bad performances, but it's about how you kind of deal with those bad performances. You know, when you miss your turn of the old sat nav, it just reroutes. And when I think about my life, you know, not going straight because it didn't go straight, it was that circuitous route that was the most interesting thing. That's where the most fascinating things came out of. And it's just to think about, it's just about having better kind of relationship with those thoughts up there in your head.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, of course, the journey is not going to be perfect. And there's so many things that can trip you up and send you ways you mightn't have expected. But sometimes that can be kind of hard to accept in the moment. So how would you deal with avoiding negative self-talk or self-image following maybe a performance like that didn't really go your way?
Exactly. What I'd always say when I was teaching, you know, I'd say at the start in fifth year, I'd say, you know, the road to the H1 or whatever grade you want to get is like littered with bad results. And nobody starts off getting H1s and just maintains it the whole way. I've never worked with that student ever. And getting a bad result and learning from it, they're the moments that you actually see someone's character. And I'd always say that to them, like, you know, how you deal with a bit of a setback, that's your learning moment. Try not to think the results as like, you know, a failure or whatever. It's about how you learn from whatever result it is, that doesn't define you. What you get in the Leaving Cert doesn't define you. What course you go into doesn't, you know, it's not life defining and all the rest of it. I do this work, but it doesn't define who I am. It's, you know, there's far more to me than just being a guy who works with families and all the rest of it. And because we all contain the multitudinous of, like, you know, different interests and different things. And so that's what I'd say to people. Look, you have to expect setbacks. In any endeavor, you're going to have to expect setbacks. If you're not expecting a setback, you know, you're going to have an unrealistic expectation of how it's going to go. And then you'll be knocked out. You'll be knocked down. You'll find yourself like, you know, deflated when the thing doesn't go right. But if you're kind of going, well, yeah, these moments where I don't do well or don't get anything, that's the learning curve. That's where I'm really learning, because it's like what Bill Gates says, success is a very poor educator. The only things you really learn from is the setbacks. If you're really listening to things, that's where you learn. You know, when you don't land on something, when you didn't get something, when your result didn't go the way you wanted it to go, that's the learning, not failure. That's the learning.
Mm-hmm, yeah, that's great advice.
Richard, I just wanted to jump in and ask you about, because we talked a little bit about motivation earlier, and a question that I always like would love to ask myself if I was back doing the Leaving Cert again, is how do you get yourself to like study something or a subject that you hate or feel weaker at? Because I always tended to obviously study the things that I loved. And how do you kind of get past that obstacle?
Yeah, I had to do that myself in the Leaving Cert. And I think that's probably what I said to start. One of the hardest aspects of the Leaving Cert is that there's a couple of rogue subjects in there that you don't particularly like. And it's probably one of the biggest flaws of the Leaving Cert that you have to study. In my day, you had to have an honor in Irish to get into college. And I did not have a good relationship with Irish, being dyslexic and Irish, you know, it's a tough old relationship there. And I didn't have any exemptions and all that kind of stuff. So I just had to grind it out. And so whatever subject you're doing, and generally they're the ordinary level subjects that you're doing there that you find particularly unpleasant or whatever it is, just say I would spend enough time to get what I want out of it. If it's not a higher level subject that you don't need the points out of, it's an ordinary level subject, which often is these subjects that we don't like, you know. We have to think about this, you know. Just because I wasn't good at Irish or maths, it didn't mean that I wasn't intelligent. And I think often the education system gives us that message that we're not that intelligent because we're not polymaths. A polymath is someone who is like absolutely brilliant in all aspects of different subjects. Very few people are polymaths, like Da Vinci and Hamlet and all the rest of those guys were polymaths, but there's very few people in real life that are polymaths. And so don't allow it to erode your confidence. Just know it's not something that you're interested in. When I think about not being good at a subject, I'd always say to students, it's just not your interest. It's not something that is your interest, you know, and that you're really particularly interested in or wanted to thrive in. So just, I would try to do the minimum to get through it, Andy, to be honest. I wouldn't let it go because it could be something you fail. I would always just, I'd never start my day study with the subject. I'd always start my day study with my favorite subjects because then I look forward to somewhat doing it, like English or history or French or whatever it is. Okay. But I'd throw Irish and maths in there too. So I was competent enough at it. You know, I might do a 25-minute, 30-minute study session on that, but do an hour in English. But I'd be ticking it over. Because if it is an ordinary level subject, I don't really more than likely need it for points.
Yeah, that's really interesting. You keep talking about like the same when you get into the exam of doing the thing that you're most comfortable with, or when you're studying, starting with the thing you enjoy the most.
Exactly.
Does that make, obviously, just settles you down and makes everything a little bit easier? Is it being smart like that is half the battle, isn't it?
Absolutely. You know, for English, if I was doing English this year, now I don't teach anymore, but if I was doing English this year, I'd be kind of going, right, well, Yeats and Heaney are on the paper. They're the two Irish male poets. One of them is coming up. And Eileen Ní Chuileánaigh and Paula Meehan is on the paper. One of those is more than likely coming up as the female Irish poets, the Irish Leaving Cert. You know, and so then I just box really clever. And I might put an American poet in there like Elizabeth Bishop to have my five poets really well prepared. And so I'm narrowing. I don't have to do the eight. I'm narrowing it down, you know what I mean? And I've been doing that with my subjects always, narrowing it down so that I can really focus in and then look at the exam papers and see what kind of questions come up and how that I can, like, you know, prepare for those questions that come up on Heaney or Yeats or whatever, Paula Meehan in there. And then I'm really well prepared for that section, which is actually only 50 marks. It's the same as your question B or your comprehension. And students spend so much time on it. I'd be like, you know, if this year I'd be really getting my head around kingship and Macbeth and how his relationship with other characters tell us about his, you know, his character and give us insights into him. They love asking those questions recently. And so I'd just be narrowing down the course to really figure out how to pick out my points and how to, you know, do really well in it. And I'd always think that like doing well in an exam is about having that savvy, that exam savvy, knowing the things that they ask, you know, knowing what they're looking for in the marking scheme. I'd always read the marking scheme for every question to see how they, what they're looking for there to give you a H1. I get my head around how they, what they're looking for. And then when I'm answering my questions, I'm building my topic sentences out of that to really go at the marking scheme. And, you know, the more you get like that, Andy, the more you're going to like, honestly, it's like the Matrix. You know, you start to see the, you know, the whole thing like Neo at the end. You start to see this whole thing is just a system. It's just a game. And if you understand it, you get better at the game. It's not your IQ. It's not about brilliance. It's just about having a bit of savvy about you and being consistent in the work that you do. And if you're consistent and you understand the exams and the questions that they ask, you will fly through this thing.
Yeah, I don't think people realize exactly how important it is to understand exactly what's being required of you in your study. Like, I think even when you were talking about how you kind of struggled with Irish more so in school and stuff, I think a lot of people don't realize that, like, when it comes to the poetry for Irish, the reading out of the poetry in the oral exam is worth 35 marks, whereas the written question is only 30. And like, people spend so much more time like learning off big long answers for the poetry and stuff. Whereas if you put more time into just the reading out of the poem, like, you can actually earn more marks.
Yeah, and they're looking to give you those points in the oral and all the rest of it. Exactly, Erin, absolutely. And I just think it's just about, like, you know, having some exam technique and savvy about you will absolutely help you. And students know an awful lot more than they think.
Mm-hmm. Definitely, yeah. And even like with those subjects that you maybe struggle with more, so it's then when you discover things that you do have more of an interest in that will fuel your motivation more so. And I think it's so important to keep reminding yourself of that, like you said, to be goal-oriented in terms of where you want to go.
Yeah.
You mentioned about the phone earlier, and I kind of want to touch a little bit more on that, because obviously it's almost impossible in this day and age to avoid going on your phone and spending time on your phone. So I kind of, like, if a student's listening to this, how do you almost know when the amount of phone time you're spending is unhealthy, or what's too much, and what's kind of normal? I know there's no normal, but what's kind of, you know?
Yeah, what's standard? Good? Honestly, Andy and Aaron, I'm glad I'm not doing my Leaving Cert in 2026, right? Because I would find myself really struggling with the phone too when I was 18, I'd imagine. They weren't around in my day now, right?
Hmm.
We didn't really have anything like that to distract you. Imagine this, Andrew and Aaron, when someone wanted to contact you, they rang the house. And your parent had to say, Richard, Sarah's on the phone for you. And you have to go down and chat to Sarah, and then your dad would be like, get off the phone, I'm expecting a call. That was communication in the 90s, right? Yeah. But for us students out there who'd struggle with impulse control and like managing themselves and all the rest of it, and you know, a snap comes in and you're like sending a photograph back to your friend messing, kind of going, what up, dude? You know, messing on the phone, all that. It massively impacts on your concentration. Would you guys did the Leaving Cert recently, what would you think about your concentration? What was it like?
Yeah, I found it very hard to stay concentrated myself. Like, I had to set a lot of screen time limits for myself, because I'd be so guilty of just picking up my phone to look at a message or whatever and then end up scrolling for ages instead of...
Aaron, if you want to see what I'm talking about, how do you feel, Aaron, when you're on YouTube, right, and those two ads come up for 30 seconds?
Yeah, the attention span is not great.
Don't you get annoyed, Andrew? Andy?
Most certainly do, yes.
Most certainly do. That will show you that your brain has been primed from your social media, from your socials there, to expect to get exactly what you want all the time. Mm. It's like when my daughter watches TV, she's like, what the hell is this ad thing about? You know what I mean? It's like, you know, your brain can't handle this interruption.
Yeah.
And so it's priming your brain to be constantly expecting. It is actually, this isn't just me saying it. It is the research out of Oxford and the rest of it is absolutely staggering about how it impacts on your concentration, how it eats away at, like, you know, important brain regions that allow you to concentrate and to put stuff into coded memory. And so if I was doing my Leaving Cert, when I have a deadline for a book. You know, I'm on my third book at the moment. And so I have a publishing company and a literary agent asking me, you know, when's this, when's that? So I'm under a deadline. And over Christmas, I have to write a lot, right? Because we're filming Traitors soon enough. And so I have to get a lot of the book done before we go into the Traitors stuff. And so I've got till the 26th of January to pretty much write a book. And I've written a good chunk of about 30,000 words, but I need to write another 30,000 words in about 6 weeks. And they have to be kind of like, you know, decent words, not just 30,000 words. They have to be good and well researched and all the rest of it. And so this phone of mine will not be next to me when I'm writing, because I'm trying to get into that flow of creativity and thinking about case studies that I've worked on. I'm trying to access all that memory and access in a way that is interesting and full of, like, you know, literature and full of poetry and songs, and so to make the whole piece interesting. And so the last thing I want is next to me as I'm sitting there, because I'll be going, well, what the hell? Oh, a friend from Cork sent me a message. That's not what I want. Hmm. And so if I'm doing the Leaving Cert, like Aaron did there, honestly, my biggest tip to anybody listening to this is I just wouldn't have it in the room with me.
Yeah,
I just turn it off and I leave it downstairs and I go up to sitting. Well, you can all feel a little bit on edge when our phone isn't around us, but it doesn't take too long for that edge to go away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like I know for me, I found the most productive I was during the Leaving Cert is in after school study, because they take our phones off us for the 2 hours. So I have no choice then but to concentrate.
A forced detox. Mm-hmm.
Get your parents to do that. That's what they have to do.
Yeah. But it would be great if you get to the place where you can do it for yourself, because going into life, you need to do it. You know, going to college, you know, yourself, and in the middle of it all, Aaron, you do need, you know, for college particularly, like, you know, you need to focus really hard. Particular moments, you know, for particular semesters, at the end of it, you might get 6 or 7 essays that you have to get done in a week. And they might be 1,000 words or 1,500 word essays. That's a lot of writing when you're 18, 19 to do in 1 week. And so you have to be focused and you have to be on for that week. And, you know, the phone has no place in the middle of all of that. And I would try to have a good relationship. Look at your history, you know, look at your time. Look at how much time you're spending on your phone. I just think, like, that is far too much time right now for me to be on my phone.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I get these. I have an app like that monitors my screen time, and it basically does it up based on like a week, and will tell me that if I continue going like that for the next 60 years, I'll spend like 6 years of my life on my phone or something like that.
Dear God,
I'm not saying it's that, but it's that kind of thing. And it's like, then you actually take notice of it.
Yeah. If you keep going the way you're going, Andy, you'll have no partner. You'll have no kids. You'll have no house. You'll end up. Yeah.
That's it. Yeah. I mean, it's the same way. Like, it could be on. That's another thing then, for if you're doing the Leaving Cert and you're on TikTok or Instagram, whatever, and you're scrolling and you're seeing people who are doing 10-hour study days, or people who are studying at night, and that's a huge thing as well, of seeing. You wouldn't have access to that if you were, you know, 30 or 20 years ago.
No,
that's another thing to deal with, isn't it?
Again, that's all noise. That's all the Leaving Cert noise. It's all influencers, you know. Again, another thing for people to think about. I'm always showing students when they give them talks about influencers talking about how to succeed. You know, and there's this one guy, I always show them, it's a funny clip of this guy thinking, and he thinks he's like this incredible wise sage about productivity. He's like, I break my day down to 3 6-hour days. My first day starts, and he's telling people how to like be really productive. And he's like, you think you're living your life just living by one day. I bend and manipulate time, so I have 3 days and you're one day. And again, it's just all rubbish. You know what I mean? It's just like, it's all just noise. Just cut that stuff out. Get what you're after. Get focused on what you want to bring into your life. And just make it come to life. And again, there's no better, I go back to it, there is no better feeling. I don't think winning the lottery would be as good a feeling as when you put a process into place and you work towards a goal or a self that you want to actualize. And those processes are right. They're not excessive. They're right. And they allow you to get optimally ready for whatever it is. And then you get the result that you want. That is an incredibly empowering moment when you realize, I've got absolute agency and autonomy about who I'm going to become in the world, and how I go about it. I know how to do it.
Yeah, definitely. It's so hard, I think, in this day and age to like stay focused in your own bubble rather than like being affected by everything that's around you. Because comparison is so rampant everywhere.
It is the thief of joy. And and also body image, Aaron, and all these things, you know, standardized ideas of, you know, these standards of beauty and all. It's very hard to be a teenage girl particularly, but also, you know, we're all bombarded by this idea of perfectionism. And you'll know at Christmas there when the whole family takes a photograph, probably 40 minutes of screaming before you all smile for the snap, you know what I mean? And that's social media, you know what I mean? And so you get that snap, then you send that off into social media, like, what a lovely family, they're all so peaceful and happy. It's all rubbish. Just be stronger, you know, in yourself to avoid getting sucked into that stuff.
Yeah. And talking there about kind of, you know, those little conflicts you might have with family, is there any sort of conflicts that you generally see arise with students and their parents during the Leaving Cert? Like even going back to phones and stuff like that, like how would you kind of recommend dealing with that and like little conflicts you might have with your family members as a result of the stressful kind of environment you're in?
Generally, parents come to me for two reasons, you know, trying to get me to mentor their child. Either their child, they feel their teenager isn't motivated and they want me to help them, or they think they're too motivated and they want me to bring them down a bit. They're both extremes, really, you know what I mean? And so, again, the conflict arises when parents feel their teenager is doing nothing, you know, or they think that they're on their devices or playing their games too much. Again, I'd always say to parents, just have a policy in the family for technology. Even if you're a teenager or 17, you still need to have a policy in the family so that the family isn't chaotically run there. And so, again, it's just about, you know, sitting down with your child there and trying to figure out how do they want to be for the next couple of months and what's going to help them there. And again, just trying to take out the conflict. You know, you don't want to be walking on eggshells because you're leaving your child, your student is doing the Leaving Cert. You want the house to be a bit of fun as well. And, you know, that you're not all tense and screaming. And of course, at times it will be with the mocks and all that. There's a few things you can do, you know, in there, like having a nice fridge full and all that kind of stuff, and just being a little bit more accepting of their bad mood when they come home, maybe not asking them too many questions about the exam. There's all small little things you can do there to kind of like allow tension not to build in the family. But again, it's over very quickly and onwards they shall move. And if they do, if they don't do a great Leaving Cert, we all find our way, Aaron. Everybody finds their way. And there's a way out there for everybody. No, nothing is so bad. It can't get a whole pile worse or better. You know what I mean? And so it's just like, you know, try not to over worry about your child as well as your parents, you know. For me, being a bad junior cert was like the catalyst to really thinking about having a better strategy and better processes. So we all need at times to do not to achieve.
Yeah, it's almost that like, not the failure, but the learning you do is in when you, as you say, when you have those experiences. And
yeah, that's where you really learn, you know?
We had an interesting question, which I think came from our very own Luke Saunders, actually, which he thought we should give to you, which I think is an interesting one. He said, what advice would you go back and give to 17-year-old Richard Hogan if you were doing the Leaving Cert, which could, you know, also be useful for people listening?
Turn off Bob Dylan. He's not going to help you here. Honestly, what I would say to 17-year-old Richard is, if I'm being really honest, I would say, okay, you know, at times that was a bit tricky in that house and all the rest of it. There was alcoholism in there and all that. And so, you know, it could be a bit hard at times. So I just tell him, really have a bit more belief in yourself, because that 17-year-old guy didn't really have that much belief at that particular time. I'd say have a bit more belief in yourself. And this is transient. This period in your life is going to be over very quickly. And you're going to be the guy with all the power in your life. And you're going to be able to bring your own family into life, and how you'll be with your children will be a very important thing about, like, you know, moving past some sort of stuff that might have been a bit negative and all that. And so I think when you're 17, you don't really see that, you know, you think you're going to be here forever and it's going to be feel like this forever. You're never going to achieve anything and all that. And I'd say to myself, you know, looking back now in my 40s, I look back and I was talking to him, I'd say, you're going to achieve a lot of things in your life, but you're going to have to really believe in yourself, and you're going to have to know that you won't achieve some things, and that's normal and that's okay. And don't let that stuff, you know, overwhelm you. Just relax about it, but believe. And actually, this is how you study. I tell him how to study even better now. I show this is what you do now. You know what I mean? I show him this is all you have to do to study. Because I figured it out in my Leaving Cert, but it took a while. And I really figured it out in college. And then all of a sudden college, and I had a laptop in college. And so I could just work on my laptop. And that changed everything. Because when I had this thing, it was slower and it got in the way because of dyslexia. You know, it wouldn't make me, it would slow me down. I couldn't get my thoughts out. My brain moves kind of quickly and all that. And so my handwriting was slow. So my thoughts would be way ahead of my handwriting. And that kind of stuff would impact you in an exam and all that. But when I have a laptop, anything can happen. And I suppose, you know, to that guy, I just say, like, you know, this is going to pass quickly. You're going to be the person who decides what kind of life you have. You're going to be in control of that. So just think about that. And I think if I said to him, you're going to be nominated for an Irish Book Award, I think he'd say, what the hell are you talking about? I'm dyslexic. Why? How could that be possible? You know, I would have thought if someone said to me, you might land in the moon at some point, that might be more believable to me than, you know, been up for book awards and all that kind of stuff. And so that's about having a bit more confidence in yourself, believe in yourself, and always bet on yourself.
Yeah, I think that's so interesting when you talk about it. Like, it's such a quick period in your life, and people, we all get stuck in the fact that it's the Leaving Cert. But I mean, really, some of those years in school are some of the best years in your life. So how do you stop and take a look around and still enjoy all the bits of seeing your friends every day while still doing the Leaving Cert?
Yeah, well, that's it. And there's an awful lot of pressure on you. And what I'd say to that is you can even feel that in school. You know, people say, oh, it's the best years of your life. Is it? I don't know personally, Andy. I didn't enjoy school. It wasn't that carefree because of what was, you know, things that were going on in my life personally. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't that carefree. Best years of my life are, I always think, ahead of me. Peak Richard has yet to hit, you know, but he's had good years. And having my own family and sitting down with the kids next to the fire at the Christmas tree and watching the toy show with three children and all that, that to me is the best years of my life, if I'm being honest. You know, that's what's better than that? If you gave me 10 million euros to sell that an hour of that, I tell you to feck off, right? Because it's priceless. And to anyone out there who understands what I'm talking about and saying, yeah, God, my school years weren't the best years. They were particularly, you know, I got awful messages from school and all the rest of it about my capacity and my intelligence. I would say, hang in there. The best years are ahead of you because you're going to be the architect of those years.
Absolutely.
I think that's something that listeners would find so reassuring to hear, because I think especially at that age, 17, 18, you're made to feel sometimes like you have to have your whole life figured out, like planned ahead of you. But it's so nice to know. I'm sure in your case, I mean, you've accomplished so much. You're an author, you've so many accomplishments, you've worked in so many different fields. I'm sure there's so much that, you know, your 17-year-old self would have never expected that you would have gotten into. So
Absolutely. I never would have thought there was a TV career there. I would never thought there was a radio career there. I never thought there would be a career in media. And that's the great thing about life. Because, you know, I suppose the one thing I would know as a truth is when you find what it is, when you find what it is that you're really passionate about, doors open, things change, you know. And that's what I'd say to your listeners. Don't fall into a college degree because your parents want you to do it and all the rest of it. And don't expect to know what your passion is just yet. I did English and psychology in my undergrad 30 years ago, you know, and then I went off and did English as a teacher for many years. And then I retrained because I love psychology and I retrained as a family therapist. And then I wrote a paper and then I got picked up by Trinity and I went in and did a PhD in there. And then I went to America on a Fulbright scholarship. And then I wrote books. And then all of a sudden I have a column in the Irish National Newspaper for the last nearly 10 years and all the rest of it. And, you know, it just incrementally happened. And if you looked at that life, you'd think it just went like that. It did in my eye, you know what I mean? There's plenty of setbacks and plenty of times where it didn't work out. If you look at the CV at all, it looks really remarkable, as in, God, my God, he was just achieving. But it doesn't work like that at all, you know? And it's really important to understand that we all have doubt and we all have self-doubt and we all don't think we can actualize something about ourselves. But the minute we start to figure out what is it, you know, what's my meaning here? What am I trying to do here? What do I want to do? Move towards that, you know, move towards what you'd like to do. What do you think you might be interested in? And understand that that mightn't exactly be it. You know, I love teaching. I don't do it anymore. And so there's another aspect now that I like, you know, in my life right now at this particular period. And it's having the courage to go after it.
Mm-hmm. You said you didn't really have to, you'd go back and tell your younger self to have more self-belief. When did that really come for you then, do you think?
In college, when I started getting scholarships and, you know, and distinctions and in that kind of stuff, I was like, oh, Christ, maybe I actually might have a bit of talent. Because I remember the first year I did, I was doing my exams in English and all that. And the university wrote to me to say you came in the top percentage of the class and all that. And they said, you know, we'd like you to keep on English in second year because in those days you could do psychology or whatever it is, you know, you could do it the other way. And I remember my first thought, Andy, was they must be hard up for numbers if they're asking me. You know what I mean? That is a very negative thing to think about yourself. I remember thinking, geez, they must be hard up. I thought there'd be more people doing English than that. I didn't actually think, God, I must have done really well for the English department to write me a letter. I don't even have, I had so little value in that, which really is little value in myself. I threw that letter in the bin. I was like, what a load of shite that is. And threw it out, you know. I'd love to have that letter now, but I threw it out because I didn't really believe in it. That's the self-belief that I'm talking about that wasn't there for a while. It took me a while to figure that out. And in my last book, you know, Home is Where the Start Is, I wrote really about how I overcame all of those self-limiting beliefs. Because I wrote that book because people positioned me as an expert. And I'm just, you know, a guy who came out of a particular family, a very loving family at times, hard family at times, and, you know, got into this profession and is well thought of in this field and all that. But I'm not, don't have perfect thinking, like, you know, and I get things wrong. And I certainly had very negative thoughts when I was young and I didn't really know what would work out for me, you know, going forward in life and all the rest of it at times and all that. And I just had some little belief that kept me going. And it was probably in around my 20s, Andy, that I started to think, hang on a second. Maybe I have something of value here. Maybe I'm not as stupid as I thought I was. Maybe I actually have something. And then I had the courage to kind of go after that to see maybe if I actually believed in myself, could I bring something together? Could I do something? You know, and I always wanted to have a family and I wanted to be married and have a family and have kids. And I didn't want them to ever be scared of me coming home. I didn't want them to, you know, fear me. I wanted them to kind of like be excited when I came in the door. And I worked towards that. And that was kind of like the goal. And everything changed then, you know.
Absolutely. It's that kind of, so for those students, it really is self-belief and, you know, setting goals. And as you say, getting outcomes clearly, if they're coming out of this, if anything, it is almost what they can do over their Christmas break is set those outcomes and try and get the distractions out of the way, like the phone, as you say, and give yourself every best opportunity to get that self-belief and go after it.
Absolutely. And go after it and have a nice little timetable. You know, you're finishing up Friday. The 19th, 20th, 21st. I take Friday, Saturday, Sunday off just to rest because it's been a long 4 months. And then maybe on Monday and Tuesday, I do a bit of study. And then Wednesday is Christmas Eve. I wouldn't study. And Christmas Day, I wouldn't study. And St. Stephen's Day, probably go gambling or whatever they all do, going to Leopardstown. I go and have that. But then on the 27th, 28th, 29th and 30th, I would do some study. And then I take New Year's Eve off and New Year's Day off. And then I do another bit of study. And then I'm back into school, take 2 days off. I'd have it like that, where I've got chunks of lovely Christmas time, but also chunks of study. And so that I'm just able to be a teenager and enjoy Christmas and also be able to understand I'm a teenager doing my Leaving Cert. And so I have a bit of study in there too.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. That balance is so important. Richard, thank you so much for talking to us today. All of your insights and your advice is so, so valuable and something that I think our listeners will really, really appreciate. If people want to see more of you and your advice, where can they find you?
Yeah. Instagram, official Richard Hogan. On Instagram, and that's probably the best place to connect with me there. And if they want to ask me a question, they can ask me a question. I'll come back to them on it, and I'll answer it for them as best as I can for them. And so all I'd say to them is try not to think of the Leaving Cert these next 4 months ahead of you as an Everest. Try to see it as a challenge to have a bit of excitement about. It's a chance to actualize a self that you mightn't have seen just yet. Get the processes in place, which is like a timetable. Don't excessively go after it. Do it in a way that's healthy. Keep some of your extracurricular stuff in. Go for runs, go for cycles, walk the dog, go out in nature, meet your friends, do all the things that are positive for firing dopamine, and believe in yourself and have the courage to go after it. Because once you believe in yourself and you have the courage to go after it, look, I mean, honestly, I'm the living embodiment of it. The amount of stuff that came into my life, the minute I thought to myself, yeah, I've got value, I'm going to go after and see what kind of value I actually have. Everything changed, and it can change for you also. And just, be positive and go out there and go after it and just understand things don't always go our way. That's okay. Doesn't go your way, you pick yourself up, you go again.
Fantastic.
All right. Thanks. All right, guys.
Thanks so much.
No worries. That's great. See you, Andy. Mind yourself, Aaron.
Thank you so much for talking to us today.